Welcome to OC Housing Connection Program, Orange County's number one trusted resource for all your real estate and home mortgage news. Here are your hosts, Hamid and Faye Hamadachi.
Hello, everyone. We hope you had a fun and relaxing weekend. Let's get started today by talking about tax savings for homeowners at the end of the year or right before you file taxes, and what do you need to do to get ready for the home purchase that's being the season that's going to start pretty soon. I'm here with my co-host Faye.
Hello, everybody.
As well as our sound engineer Paul.
Always curious to hear what you have on the docket.
Well, we always have good news. You know, it's the market has been actually pretty good in the last few years. As you notice, prices keep going up, and interest rates are actually in very good.
Even though the Fed raised it a quarter of a point and didn't fall apart, and rates didn't shoot up.
Right, the short terms went up, but the interest rates long term stayed pretty steady.
They've actually, I think, they've come down since they
have.
That's good news for the home buyers. You know, if you're looking to buy a home, that's a good time to buy when the rates are low.
Well, the ECB also lowered the rates to zero.
I know, to zero.
And they said they're not going any lower. That was funny for me.
They're
going
to pay you to put their money in there.
Yeah, now, the rising home values has actually helped homeowners a little bit last year. This is all of 2015. So there's less, you know, about 6,000 homes are not under the water anymore.
That's the positive side of it.
Just because the value went up.
Yeah. Exactly.
The negative is when I sit down and try to qualify the same people for a higher price, it becomes more difficult.
Mm. That's true. Now, keep something in mind, though. Even though approximately 6,000 homes went up in prices, some of them have less than 5% equity in them. So, yes, it's nice that you live in a house now that is a little bit more than what your mortgage is, but you still can't sell those homes, because when you sell a house and you have less than 5% home equity in there, it's going to cost you money to sell that house.
Now, is this 6,000 homes in California?
In Orange County. Yeah, if you want in California, I can give you some of this. See, by comparison, for example, in LA County, it was 4.5% of Los Angeles homes that went up. So,
what was the percentage for Orange County? Is it just a
2.4%.
So the value went higher in Los Angeles County overall?
No.
There were more homes that got out of water.
No, you see, 2.4% of Orange County homes with mortgages, fewer than one in 40 were underwater in California.
In Orange County. Yeah. So there are less homes in Orange County that are underwater than it is in Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles was 4.5%.
So we still have like a percentage of
small
homes.
Small percent, yeah. When you compare this to Las Vegas and Miami, which is 20% of homes still underwater.
Wow.
And in San Francisco, for example, less than 1% were underwater. You can tell, you know, from the prices.
Well, in San Francisco, you can't find homes.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
It's the worst. I think it's the worst county is actually in the San Jose area as far as affordability. It's worse than Orange County.
Exactly. So it's good news. In a way, you know, the prices are getting back to where they were before, although not as much.
When does it spill over to like the Inland Empire and other places like that? When do we see, because essentially what you're saying is all the houses in Orange County are back to where they were.
Exactly, yes.
And that was a high number. So now you're going to have people commuting, driving, moving
further? Probably, yeah. The problem, Paul, is employment.
Employment's
still weak in the Inland Empire, Riverside and San Bernardino. Until those figures go up, the home prices won't be going up as much, although they are going up.
Mm-hmm.
You can see actually increases in Riverside and San Bernardino counties, but not as much as Orange County, mainly because of employment.
Well, the other thing is, you know, in Riverside County and San Bernardino, they're still building. There's still a lot more land to build. So it's a matter of supply and demand. When you have, you know, more supply, the chances are the price is not going to move as much.
Because we're basically landlocked here. We've got the mountains on one side, the ocean on the other, L.A. to the north.
We're pretty much done. I think there is an area they're building right now near the
Ladera Ranch.
Call it Viejo something.
Mission Viejo. Rancho Viejo.
Viejo.
It's the last of the ranch.
I think the last of the ranch they're building, and I don't really know if there's any. There's some areas in the Great Parks they're building. Mm-hmm.
They have pockets of
pockets like there's
land
not
available.
Like, apart from that, I can't really think of anywhere else we have lands. Mm-hmm. That's
we're
going to
be like San Francisco, all built out.
Yeah,
I believe so. Actually,
it's not time to get out, Paul. Yet,
okay,
you're gonna have to hold on to this Orange County home.
Hold on.
I don't think anybody's gonna leave Orange County. That was one of the problems we talked before. Most of the baby boomers have already got their homes in Orange County. They're not gonna sell and move.
No.
Well, there's a lot more people that actually can buy a home, but they can't afford to buy a
home. And in my case, we don't want to move yet. We don't want to just give up and move to Arizona or out to Sun City yet or whatever, because we're still feel like we're young and vibrant and have things to do. We want to be near our grandkids, and we also don't want to increase our property taxes. I'm still locked into the old property tax rate. So if I sold it and bought something comparable with it, I'd be paying double tax rates.
No, remember what I taught you on that. So let me just bring
remind you this,
because this is a very good tip for if I think you're under 50,
55.
If you can move your tax bases one time if you move. So let's say you bought your house for $500, right? Just pick a number.
Right.
And, you know, 5 years from now, your home is worth $1 million. You want to sell that home and go buy something smaller or the same price.
Right.
You could take your tax bases with you.
So but only if you're under 55?
No, over 55.
Over 55.
One time only.
One time only.
I forgot about that. Hallelujah. Well, then I'm going.
Yeah. Then,
I think yes, but keep in mind quality of life, too. I mean,
yes.
Would you want to change the quality of life that you have in Orange County to, say, Riverside somewhere or San Bernardino?
I mean, there's nice pockets everywhere, I think. Sure. I mean, if you go to Riverside, Temecula is a very nice area.
Beautiful.
There's Murrieta is very nice. You know, there's nice areas in every city, but I think for working, there's more job. I mean, if you're young, there's more jobs
more
in Orange,
too.
So there's more vibrant, and you're near the you know, the ocean, so you get the ocean breeze, so the weather is nicer in Orange County.
We love Orange County.
So,
now, is that... That's your tax rate, so we're talking about your state tax rate. That wouldn't apply if I moved to Arizona or something.
That's property taxes.
Right, or yes, property tax. I'm sorry.
No,
yes.
You're asking me something that's very interesting.
Well, you're talking about income taxes and stuff.
I'm not talking about income taxes.
Yes,
I'm talking about your property taxes. You're allowed to take it one time and buy another one. Now, I don't know if you can buy one in out of state. That would be a question.
I think you should be able to. Now, keep something in mind, Paul. When you sell your house as a homeowner, married, you get a $500,000 deduction one time from the federal government. The
that's
money that
income
you made.
Taxes.
Income tax.
Right.
So that's also a benefit. You know, if you sell your house, let's say you make $400,000, you don't pay any taxes on that.
Yeah.
I want to just explain this because I get asked this a lot, many times. Mm-hmm. Is people think that if they sell the home and buy another home, their primary, they don't have to pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
That used to be the law many, many years ago. It got changed. Whereas if you sell your home, your primary resident, you don't have to buy another one as long as you have your capital gain, like your actual gain from the sale of the home, as a married couple is under $500,000 and a single person $250,000, you're not subject to income taxes on that gain.
Mm-hmm.
And this can happen every 2 years.
And this can happen every 2 years. Like, you can make, I can buy a home and, like, live in it, but, you know.
Make $250,000 if I'm single and then sell it.
Yeah, that would be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
that would be
that.
Like, yeah, let's just do that, Paul.
Let's do that for 5 or 10 years and see what happens.
Right. Now, well, just a reminder for everybody, if you're paying your property taxes, there is property taxes. If you have it on your as an impound account or an escrow account, the bank is paying it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are property taxes due. They're due as of right now, but your deadline to pay it is April 10th.
Mm-hmm.
So just want to bring that to everybody's attention.
Make sure you
double whammy. You got taxes and you got property taxes here. You got
exactly. That's why you want to impound your property tax so you don't get hit with such a high payments. Right around April, Paul.
Yeah, that's what I did a long time ago. And at first I thought I was a loser for doing that. Then I thought, you know, it makes it so much easier.
I honestly think it's one of the best things that you can do as a homeowner. Just impound your taxes and let the bank pay it for you when it's due.
Yep.
Number one, you never forget, so you don't get penalized.
Right.
Number two, you don't have to come up with a big chunk of money during the time.
That's what I was doing. I kept forgetting about it. And
exactly. And you know,
I should have been saving, and then 3 months would go by, and I go, oops, I didn't put anything aside.
For those people who do pay it themselves, the deadline, your first half is due on December 10th. Like, you... It's the, you know, I mean, it's if you pay it after December 10th, you get penalized, and the second half is due
April 10th,
and if you don't pay it by that date, you get penalized.
Also, remember that the property tax year goes from July 1st through June 30th.
Yes.
It doesn't go by the calendar year.
Right.
The fiscal year for property taxes starts from July 1st of 2015 through June 30th of 2016.
As if I wasn't confused enough, yes.
Just
the way
just to get you more confused. So just remember, just take this away from this show. There's a property tax. If you own a property, if you do not have an impound, go check your bill. There's a bill you have to pay by April 10th. And April 10th is the absolute like deadline.
Right.
Like
and for those listening later, we're taping this on March 14th. So we're harping on this.
You could go online and check these through. By going looking at your address or your assessor's parcel number, you can actually find your property tax, how much it's due. It's online. You can pay it online. You can pay with a credit card, etc. So the county has made it much easier for people to pay their property tax. If you can't find the bill, go online, look it up. They tell how much you owe and so on.
Mm-hmm. Now, I just wanted to also bring something else to everybody's attention. You know, what is the advantage and disadvantage of actually impounding your taxes? Mm-hmm. The only time I don't recommend you anybody impounding their taxes if there's a huge difference between what the assessed value of the property is, your actual taxes. And I'll give you an example. I buy a home from somebody that the house is worth $800,000, but it's only assessed for $200,000. Mm-hmm. Well, if I go and impound my taxes, the tax bill does not get reinstated. It doesn't get changed till up to 6 months after you purchase the property, 6 months to a year. So when people do impound, sometimes the money is sent back to them, and then they get supplemental tax bill.
Mm.
And that's like that's just a subject on its own that we can cover in about an hour. But just be sure that, like, if you are impounding and you're getting a big chunk of money back from your bank saying, hey, there's too much money in your impound account, don't spend the money. Put it away.
You said one of your clients once thought that was his Harley Davidson.
Yeah, he actually bought his Harley with it. And I had to remind him and let him know later on that, you know, he had to, you know. So put that money away. If you're getting an impound, if you're getting a refund, don't go spending it until you figure out whether that's your money to keep or not.
Does the tax season affect the real estate market? And by that, I'm thinking people get through all their taxes and they feel richer suddenly, they either get a refund or it's done. Does that make them suddenly want to go out and buy houses? Or is it just the season and the time of year, schools and it's prettier out and everything?
I think it does. First time home buyers, because let's say you go to your CPA, that's when you realize when you file your taxes, how much taxes you paid the year before.
Yeah.
So your CPA, or you're getting a big refund check, and your CPA tells you, you know, better get take that refund check, go put it down for your down payment or do something. I get a lot of calls after people do their taxes. It's not that they're going to start buying a home right there, but it gives them, they get the idea, like if they are on a high
Sometimes when they pay too much tax, they get a refund.
So that's
because I know that's the second half of your discussion today, and I'm wondering why. I understand in the Midwest it's miserable. Nobody wants to go out where I grew up in December and buy a home unless you have to, or January. You don't want to slog around in the snow looking at stuff. It doesn't look pretty. You don't feel in the mood. You've just had all these bills for the holidays. It's just psychological. But here, I've always wondered why that still holds true. Why is spring the time to buy housing?
One of the reasons, Paul, is because school system. You know, most people have children at school. They don't want to take their kids out of school in the middle of the year and put them in a new school.
No, clearly.
So they usually wait till the school year is over. They start looking for a home. And hopefully by the time the new school year starts, they've already made a decision where they're going to live and what school their children are going to go to. That's one of the main factors, actually. Plus, you know, when you look at the season, there's more daylight time, they have more time to start
looking. More daylight savings, right? Just psychological things
so,
like that.
Exactly. So,
well, you think about it, you know, if you want to look at a home when in the winter when it gets
dark at
dark
4 o'clock.
By 4 o'clock. You really don't have much of time.
Yeah, like, after work, you can't run and look at
after work, you know, when it's 8 or 9 o'clock, you could actually go look at homes after you work, and, you know, so. Mm-hmm. And, you know, springtime is a new time anyway, you know.
So it's but always been, you know, seasonal.
I mean, to me, when I first came to California, it all felt like springtime year-round. I wasn't tuned into the subtle shifts in the seasons here. It wasn't as dramatic as Michigan. I'm amazed. It still does hold true, doesn't it, that spring and summer is the time to sell.
That's, nothing is as dramatic as the weather in Michigan, assure you.
Yes. Very dramatic. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, since we're talking about taxes, let me talk to about a little bit about what tax savings you have as a homeowner that you should consider before April 15th when you're filing your taxes.
Okay.
It's important.
It's not too late to think about that.
If you did your refinance or if you bought a home last year, for example, you can still deduct the points on home mortgages and refinancing. Now, something that's very interesting you got to keep in mind is, and this is how IRS says it, is if you bought your first home using loan or got a loan to build the first home, you can deduct all your points at all at once.
Mm.
But if it's your second, if it's not your first home, then you have to amortize the points and deduct it yearly, depending on how long you're living in that house.
Mm-hmm.
That's something to keep in mind.
Usually you can amortize a loan that you refinance, but on a purchase you get to write it off all on the first year as part
of
your purchase.
Well, according to IRS, it says if it's your first home, you can do that. But if it's refinance or if it's another, you know, home, we can't do that.
So different rules if it's your first home or your...
How do you do they know it's your first home?
But it's something.
Maybe it's purchase, I think.
Probably, but you got to keep in mind, deduct your points that you paid when you refinance or you got a loan. That's something you can deduct. The second thing you can deduct is the interest on home improvement loans. If you got a loan, if you have a HELOC, for example, or if you got a loan to improve, add a pool or improve your kitchen or stuff, you can deduct that up to 100% of the value of your home. You cannot deduct more than that.
So if I, let's say if my house is worth $500,000 and I have a $400,000 first mortgage and a $200,000 second mortgage, I cannot deduct the second mortgage.
You can deduct the second mortgage up to the first $100,000 of it. You cannot deduct more than what's your home worth.
So if, let's say, so if I had bought the house at the top of the market and I spent all this money fixing it,
then you're stuck.
Then if my property is like
drops.
Water, like it drops, not only it's I'm going to suffer for the drop in my value, I'm going to have to sit here and cry about like the fact that I can't even take the deduction. On what I borrowed.
Yeah. Wow.
You can only deduct up to 100% of the value of your home.
That's the current value, not the old value.
Yeah, but that's the... Isn't it my... Well, if it's an investment,
If it's an investment, it's different.
So it's actually my investment, cost of my investment.
Now, you can also deduct interest on your second home if you use it at least 14 days or 10% of the rentable value, fair rental days. You can also deduct the interest on those.
And isn't there a limit on how, on the other side of it, you have to use it so many days, but you can't use it too many days.
Exactly, yes. Well, I think it's 14 days or 10% of what they call fair rental days. Let's say your home is only usually rented in the summertime for, say, 6 months. 10% of that would be what you can use it, you know, to... for yourself.
Well, you can only write off, I think, up to $1.1 million, right, of mortgage. It doesn't matter. Regardless, I mean, you could owe $5 million, but if you only... That's the limitation for mortgage write-off.
Yeah.
What percentage of people in Southern California, I'm sure you don't have this at your fingertip, it'd be interesting to know, have a second home. When I grew up in the Midwest, that was very popular. In Minnesota, Michigan, whatever, you have a lake home, you have somewhere else. Here, I don't know of anybody that... I haven't second home, but I don't know of anybody that has a second home.
Well, actually, second home is what you actually live, not an investment. See?
But I'm just thinking like vacation home or something, you know.
Actually, if you go to Balboa Island, there are a lot of people with second homes there.
That's probably true,
You know, many people who live in Beverly Hills area or other very expensive areas, they have second homes there.
We just don't grow up in an area like in the Midwest. Or in the South, they have hunting cabins,
right,
or they have lake places or whatever. That's a very popular retreat. I don't know of people who want to retreat out of Orange County and go up and live in the mountains or in the desert or something.
Here. Some do. I know some people have cabins in Mammoth for skiing.
Mm-hmm. Really no other better place than to be in Orange
County. Right.
You don't need a second home.
You don't need a second
home. You can
home,
only so afford, if you can afford one, you should be happy.
Happy.
forget about the second home.
Yeah. Now, the other thing you can deduct is property tax. Mm-hmm. We were just talking about it. And this tax you can deduct depending on when you paid. Some people actually pay their property tax, both payments, in December, so they can deduct it for the previous year. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
You got to look at how much income you made and whether it's beneficial to you to do that or not.
It's always a good idea in December to look at your bottom line, and because a lot of times, I know your deadline is to pay it in April 10th, but it may be advantageous to you to like take it 1 year versus the other. Even though the bill is you can pay till in April, you can pay it earlier on too. Nobody stops.
It always seemed like a false game to me, though, because you say, "Well, okay, I'm going to save the money this year. I'm going to pay it all in December." How do you know next year you're not going to need it even worse? Unless you know exactly what your income is, you might.
Exactly.
Then you feel bad at the end of that year because you don't have that deduction.
It's time value of money. The saving today is worth more than it is the following year.
I guess it is.
Do you remember Stat 101?
I guess it is.
Now,
take today, don't wait till tomorrow.
Don't wait till tomorrow.
The other thing that you should look at and see if you can deduct is residential energy efficient tax credits. If you added an air conditioning, special type of roof to your home, energy efficient windows, storm doors, things like that, you can also deduct those.
Does it apply to water saving things too, like turf? For low flow toilets and other things?
I don't think that's actually something you can deduct on your taxes, although you can probably save a lot of money.
And I know the water districts have rebates and stuff, turf rebates and stuff, but I don't know if that stuff qualifies as a home energy saver or just a water saver.
It's not energy, it's water saver. So
another thing I want to bring to our listeners' attention is, like, let's say you bought the home maybe in March or April, you don't have quite 12 months of mortgage history. Sometimes you can pay your January, like in December, earlier, so you can take the deduction that year, too. So that's something you should always look at, too. Because you could always
pay an extra amount of one
instead
month.
Of just paying at the head. So making that January payment in December. You can take that deduction that year. Versus
so it's when you pay it, it's not when it's due.
Exactly.
Yeah, because at the end of the year, you're going to get a statement from the bank that says this is how much interest you paid for the year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I guess it depends on your tax situations. If you're trying to save taxes or if you don't have enough deductions, that's when you start, doing those.
I always recommend when people buy the properties in the middle of the year, I always recommend them. Like, because that year they don't have quite 12 months, and if they want to take advantage of, like, get a little bit more saving that year, is to pay that mortgage a little bit in advance so they can take the deduction for the year,
Okay. Lots of tax considerations into buying a house.
Of course.
But at the end of the term, people are still buying them when they feel there's a seasonality to this still here.
Well, people buy the home part based on their needs. But as a homeowner, you get a lot of tax benefits. And I know the Congress has been looking at taking away all these benefits. I don't see it happening very soon.
Ted Cruz wants a flat tax, many others.
There's been a lot of talk about, why do we deduct the interest rates on the taxes, on the homes that we buy, we pay, et cetera, and there's talk of limiting that or taking away altogether. I don't see it happening. It's one of the few benefits left to the American
and people are
consumers that
people want that one. That's hard to let go of. Even if you can show that you're saving money in the long run, that's hard to let people go.
Exactly. So now the other thing you can deduct is renewable energy tax credit. If you added a solar panel or any wind power energy generation,
wasn't that going to expire though, or something?
It's actually been extended till the end of December 2016.
Okay.
Now you can actually take a 30% of the cost, which includes installation. So if you spend $50,000 and installing a new solar panel, you can deduct $15,000 of it. including installation and
right off your taxes.
So that's a pretty good, decent chunks of, you know, money to save. Now, the other thing you can deduct, and this is very interesting, it's the first time I heard, it's ground rent.
If you ground actually, rent.
Okay. Certain homes in America are on leased land.
Isn't Monarch Beach one of those?
I think very few in Monarch Beach and in the university area, too.
Irvine.
Or in Costa Mesa, there's a lot of it.
And I don't explain to me how that works. I still don't get it.
Basically, you buy a house, you own the house, Paul, but the land that the house is on doesn't belong to you.
And you lease that.
So you're paying monthly lease to whomever is the owner. I know in Costa Mesa, the city actually owns some of the land. And you pay lease to them. In Irvine, I believe you pay to Irvine Company. In Monarch Beach,
there was a lawsuit in Irvine, and so they've actually came up with a formula. At any point, anybody can go and buy the land.
At a
specified price, like that's set. So, but Irvine, there's very few left, in the Irvine, in the university area. I think the place that I see the most is Costa Mesa. And when we go to do a mortgage, the term of the lease has to be longer than the term of the loan.
Oh.
So if your ground lease is for 20 years, I can't give you
15 years.
If I have to give you a 15-year or a 20-year loan, I cannot give you a 30-year loan.
Right.
So we cannot give a loan a lease expires, because literally, what are you going to do with that house? I mean,
you can't pick it up and move it. You can, but not very easily.
I mean, I'm not sure how you're going to pick up like a part of a condo and move it.
Well, they usually renew the lease, but it's the uncertainty that the banks don't like. You know, let's say you pay $200 a month on lease, and if the lease expires and it all of a sudden jumps to $500 a month, it makes a big difference on people's.
And has that ever happened?
It did happen in Irvine, and that's why the lawsuit came about. The lease expired, and then when the company which owned the land renewed the lease, they had jacked it up a lot.
So it must have been a way to buy cheaper homes in otherwise expensive areas.
Yes, exactly.
I'm just going to sell you the building and not the land.
Exactly. No. If there is 15 years left, more than 15 years left on the lease, you can actually deduct the ground rent on your taxes. That's IRS rule.
Oh, it has to have at least
more than 15 years left before.
On.
Yes,
So if I'm down to 5 years, I'm out of luck.
Exactly. You better figure out how you're going to take that house with you.
Interest me, and I think a CPA would probably be able to answer that. Let's say I buy a house and it has 20 years left on it. What happens after, say, 6 years when there's less than 15 years? Do I stop taking deductions on that house?
Yeah.
I mean, that seems to be.
And what happens if they raise it so much and you can't afford the new lease?
Well, that's
Own the house. You've probably paid off the house. I own it lock, stock,
and barrel. That's part of the problem. That's why the banks do not want to lend you money if the term of the lease is less than the mortgage term.
Yeah.
Because they don't know if you're going to be able to afford it once the new lease comes into effect.
Well, the way a lender looks at it is like it has to be something that we can like quantify. Like, I mean, we have to know exactly what's going to happen.
Sure.
And I think if anybody's buying a lease land, they better know exactly what the terms of that lease is, because in reality, that home is worth nothing if you can't really
now,
renew the lease.
Is there a limitation on number of banks that lend on lease land, or is wouldn't?
No, Fannie Mae is okay with lending. Fannie and its agencies are okay about lending on a lease land, but it's just the terms of the lease has to be longer than the term of the loan. So the lease can't finish before the loan finishes. Because if it does, then we're out to dry.
Is that an old way of doing things? Because I haven't heard of anybody doing that in a long time. You say Irvine, that was a long time ago. Monarch Bay was in the 70s or 80s or whatever. I can't believe that anybody's doing that anymore, but am I wrong?
I mean, it depends how it was set up, I guess. I mean,
I don't have any new developments where they're using this.
I don't know. The only, the one that I see the most is Costa Mesa. If I had to pick a city, I would say
Huntington Beach, I think.
Huntington Beach has very few areas. I think Costa Mesa is probably has the most.
Especially near the
South Coast Plaza.
Right around here.
Now, I want to clarify something on reverse mortgages. When people get a reverse mortgage, they actually get a monthly income. That's not considered income to them. That's actually a loan. So they don't get taxed on it. But at the same time, they cannot deduct the interest that is accumulating until they pay the mortgage off, and that interest is actually do then?
You can't get it two ways. You
exactly.
Can't,
so you don't get the income, but you also can't write off the interest, too.
That's you mean I can't have my cake and eat it, too? Darn it.
Something like
darn
that.
It. All right, well, let's take a quick break and digest that for a moment here, and we'll come back and start talking about the seasonality and finish up our discussion of taxes here. It's that time of year, folks, right here on OC Housing Connection.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
Are you in the market for an FHA, VA, or even a jumbo mortgage loan? Call 949-228-1008 and talk to Faye Hammondanchi. With over 20 years of experience and a 5-star rating on Yelp, she is the best person to help you get that loan approval. Her expertise in mortgage loans and the first-time credit buyer program is unmatched in the industry. Call 949-228-1008 and let her take your dreams to reality. Why shop for a mortgage loan anyplace else? Let Faye Hammondanchi handle all the work for you. From start to loan approval, she's got you covered. Faye Hammondanchi, NMLS number 221329. Mortgage loan originator from Sierra Pacific Mortgage, NMLS number 1788. Located at 22976 El Toro Road, Lake Forest, California, 92630. Is licensed in California by the Department of Business Oversight and the California Residential Mortgage Lenders Act, number 417-0015.
We're back with all the tax deductions that you need to get to. Now, one other point I was going to get to is private mortgage insurance. You can actually deduct that. This was set to the expire in 2014, but was extended for 2015 and 2016. Now, keep something in mind that the deduction for qualified mortgage insurance is reduced if your adjusted gross income is over $100,000. And it's if it's over $109,000, you just can't deduct it, period.
So if you make too much money, then
you just basically can't deduct it. And if it's if you're single, it's $50,000 and $54,500.
That's not a lot of income.
Well, it's not for California, but you know when you look at the average income
nationwide, it is. Here, that's peanuts.
Exactly,
here, right?
Nationwide is quite a lot.
That's like being on the poverty level, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. And you figure, well, what's the average house in America? What do you think the average house is? I'll bet it's like
150,000, 60,000.
Something like that, yeah. Right. You couldn't get even a condo here for 150,000.
Yeah. I know when we were doing loans in Florida, most of the loan amount was about 70,000, 80,000.
Yeah.
It's very unusual to get that many loans which are same size as California.
Yeah.
So
right.
Many parts of the country, in fact, I would say even Nevada, when you go there, the homes are not that expensive.
Well,
Oregon, you know.
That's why I want to talk about mortgage insurance a little bit.
Let's talk about mortgage insurance a little bit.
So let's define mortgage insurance.
We covered this before. I'm still confused.
Mortgage insurance is not for the benefit of the client.
Yes, you keep saying that.
You're not going to get anything out of that insurance. That is an insurance that you have to purchase and pay for, so that the bank will be able to sell your loan in the secondary market.
I hate that.
I don't want
to help the bank. I don't care about the bank.
Yeah, but then if you didn't have mortgage insurance, we couldn't do loans that with less than 20% down.
Yes, that's true.
So if you don't have, like right now Fannie Mae started doing the 3% down again, so we could do a mortgage with 3% down with Fannie Mae. Now, the amount of mortgage insurance there's a couple of factors that affects your actually monthly payment for mortgage insurance.
Okay.
One is being as how much money you're putting down.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're putting 5% down, you're going to have a higher mortgage insurance than if you're putting 15% down. Because it's a bigger risk.
Right.
Now, the second thing that affects mortgage insurance is your FICO score.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your FICO score, if you've got a 740 FICO, a lot of mortgage insurance companies have lowered their premium for you now. the lower. So if you could pay a 1% different, and I'm just throwing a number out there, and everybody's case is different, being at 625 co versus a 725 co. And that's why we try to utilize an FHA loan if you don't have a very high FICO score. FHA, we don't call it mortgage insurance. We call it MIP.
Yeah, that's where you lost me, right?
But yeah, it's the same thing.
It's the same concept.
The terminology is different, that's all.
It's basically with an FHA loan, it's a money, that's a pool of money. Everybody that pays mortgage insurance, it stays in this pool. So if there is any deficiencies, paid from that pool.
That's but FHA isn't going to sell those loans, are they?
They're not going to sell it. But if they have a loss, the money is paid from that pool of money. That's why they up the mortgage insurance, because there was not enough money in the pool to pay for the deficiencies.
Right. So for them, it serves a different purpose. For everybody else, it's your lender is probably going to sell it to somebody, and if you haven't put down enough or you got bad credit, they want to be able to sell it to them with some assurance that they're going to get paid.
So basically, that mortgage insurance premium is paid, like, depending on what coverage the lender took at the get-go, is, let's say, 25-30% of the value of the property. So if the loan is, let's say, like, it's $100,000, you have another $30,000 that's covered in case you go bad. The bank gets paid for that insurance.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I've never even bothered to go look again. You keep telling me to go look and find some coupon. Whether or not you had this initially, it might, as your property goes up in value, as your payments, as you pay off the property, or as it goes up in value, you might not need that.
Very true.
I recommend that if you've purchased a property with mortgage insurance, it's been more than a year and a half, for you to go look and see. There is a potential you could.
How about if it's been 10 years or 20 years?
It might, with you, I know it's dropped. You don't even know about it. I've come to that conclusion with you without looking at your paperwork. But now, when we go out to give mortgage insurances, sometimes we give it to you on a monthly basis, but there's ways for us to do a loan without you seeing the mortgage insurance.
That's what I'm concerned about. I don't even know it's in there.
Well, here's how it works. You know, I could, instead of giving you a premium for it and charging you $60 a month, I could also do what we call lender paid MI, which is like... It's not that you don't pay for it. It just pay for it in a different way.
It's a hidden way.
Yeah. Which is may work for you. And this is why I would basically offer these different options to a buyer. You can pay like a lump sum up front and write it all off, and then you don't have a monthly payment, which I wouldn't do when the market is depreciating. Or you can just pay it in the form of an interest rate. So instead of, let's say, if the going rate is 4% today, you pay 4.25%, but you don't actually pay a different amount for mortgage insurance.
Got it.
That is good for somebody who's on a high tax bracket, because they can't write off the mortgage insurance, because if they're adjusted grossly, they make too much money.
Right.
But they can write off the interest.
So it's another way to categorize it.
Or we could do a mixture. We could do a little bit of upfront, a little bit monthly. So there's like 60 different ways that you can see you actually buy the mortgage insurance. You really need to talk to the person that's doing your loan and find out what is the best fit for you.
I am going to be so much smarter when I buy a house someday than I ever was when I bought this one 20 years ago. And again, I repeat myself over and over on this show. Who is supposed to tell you all this stuff? Your lender, your real estate agent, or are you just supposed to be smart enough to know this?
Combination of all, Paul.
Because
I don't remember having any of these conversations when I bought.
You hope that you're dealing with professionals, so your loan officer or your realtor will actually tell you the benefits either way, you know, whether you should get the mortgage insurance.
Faye's got her hand to her head like, oh, my God, here we go again. But I don't remember anybody ever talking about it. They're saying, do you want to do it this way? Do you want to do it this way? How much your income? And
right. Plus, as a consumer, you should be an informed consumer, especially in today's environment where you can get anything on Google. I would do a little bit of background search to see what are my choices. What's in mortgage insurance? How much down payment? Remember, Faye was going to talk about how to get ready to buy a home. Part of this is talking to a lender, so the lender can inform you what you need to get in order to buy a house. How much down payment you have, and at that point, the lender will tell you, well, you have less than 20% down down payment, you can still buy a house, but now you got to consider mortgage insurance and how much more that mortgage insurance is going to be, or whether you want to wait and save up some more and forget about mortgage
insurance. But again,
insurance.
People only buy a couple of houses in their lifetime. And
probably,
so you
yes.
do this over 10, 20-year
yes.
period.
Yes.
It's not something you think about very often. So you really do have to go get ready to do this if you think it's coming.
Get the right person.
I agree with you.
Well,
now,
that's why you call
keep
fame.
Something in mind. Single-family mortgages are pretty standard, and the government has actually set certain rules for it. So there's some way of protecting the consumer.
You know, I always think of when I have young people walk into my office, I always remember myself when I was 20 years old when I bought my first home.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely
You're only 30 had, now, so it wasn't that long
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, that's a long time ago. And I had no clue. I just remember signing paperwork.
Yeah,
and
kind
I
of what I did.
And, but you know, where it was a different environment back then. We didn't have Google. Now, you know, and if I want to make a purchase, I go search it on the internet.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty old, but I do still do
And when
that.
All these things came up, we've talked about impound accounts. We've talked about PMI. We've talked about home mortgage, inspections and all that. They were just pieces of paper stuck in the stack. And I'm like, what's this? And they said, just shut up and sign it.
Well, you really need to. That's why, you know, it's
And
like
there was no Google. No, so long ago, I couldn't go look it up.
That's why it's important to go with somebody who, let's say, a friend or family has gone with, or somebody you feel comfortable that can answer your questions.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're calling your lender or your realtor and you're not getting the answer, you're probably at not a right place, because you have the right to know all these information.
Most of the stuff I didn't see until it came time for that magic signing day. And when I started reading the giant package, as I've said 100 times, who handles the escrow agent looked at me horrified and said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm reading it." He said, "There's no time for that. We got 12 other people waiting here. Just start signing." I didn't get I don't recall seeing all this stuff beforehand. A lot of it was new to me from when I was signing it.
Well, the law has
That's my
changed.
Perception. Maybe
the,
maybe
the
I'm
new with the new mortgage law, you're
yes.
actually given the closing. You're given your closing statement
yes.
a few days,
and it's
in
pretty
advance.
Close to the reality. We talked about that. Where
it
they used
has
to be,
or
yes.
you it could delay your closing.
Exactly.
I had a case the other day where it's like, I guess there was something on the property where you know how it's like in it's it wasn't Ladera Ranch, but somewhere in Tustin, where the buyer had to basically pay something to get part of the association,
mm-hmm.
and we were told like 4 days before closing, and we had to tell the seller. The seller had to eat it up.
There you go.
It was just not an option of adding it.
Because it would have delayed it, right.
Yeah, but in the old days, what would have happened? Like you said, they would have just thrown it at you and told you to sign it and given
it
you...
Up. Yeah.
Just
Paul,
suck it
you
up.
You always have a chance of reading your loan documents. I know a lot of times they put it in front of you in escrow and say, sign it, but you also have a choice. You know what? I don't want to sign this. I'm going to take this home, read it, come back to you next day or 2 days
yeah.
from now and do it. In fact, one of our clients does that all the time. He's been our
yeah,
client
you
many
can
times.
Do that with a refinance, but on a purchase is like, I get what Paul says. A lot of times mm-hmm. there are deadlines.
Right,
you don't have
right.
the luxury of taking it home and reading
yeah.
it. And, you know, I had a
And we've already got a moving company coming, and I've already gotten rid of the other property, the condo we had. And, you know, I feel caught. I feel stuck. I got to do this. And
well, you got to read these things
on
ahead
the positive
of time.
Side, Paul. A lot of the writing on those loan documents are standard. The things that you're mm-hmm. concerned with, the interest rate that you're getting, the LTV of, you know, how much you're putting down, how
right.
much the bank
I knew that.
Is lending you, and the length of the mortgage.
Right.
As long as
that's
those
about
are
all the three
exactly,
things I knew, yeah.
Those are, if they're correct, you don't want to read everything that's written, which is legalese for attorneys and so on.
But I have since learned, listening to the show, the importance of home inspection reports. I thought
right.
it was kind of a joke. I didn't really think too much about PMI or any of this stuff here. Whether I still don't even know whether I had it or don't have it.
I assure you, yours is done.
And and in value of an impound account versus and all these kind of decisions you make. Now maybe I didn't have that kind of income when I bought it to worry about some of these high income things. But there's a lot goes into it. I wonder if somehow through realtors or through other places. HUD and stuff, that we could get this kind of show, this kind of content available to people. Because I'll tell you what, in today's world, If I knew I was buying a house in 6 months, this would be one of the ways I would research it. I would start listening to podcasts. I would
honestly
start listening.
Don't think there's anything else available out there than this show. I've actually searched it because when we do this show, I was looking to see what else I can find that has the same contents. There's a lot of written material out there.
And nobody wants to read it.
Nobody
anymore.
Actually puts it in a podcast or in a radio program.
Yeah. And I keep wondering if there's some way we could take this podcast. Anybody listening, give us a suggestion that we could get this out to prospective homebuyers, people who are starting to enter that phase, as we talked about. You're getting your credit ready. You're starting to go out and see what you qualify for. It'd almost be great if the banks would say, or if the lenders would say, here's a podcast. Go listen to this over the next 6 months. They're going to give you a lot of ideas.
I want to correct you on one thing while you were talking. You talked about how you didn't know these sticks because this has to do with the high end. Everything that you and I discuss is not for the high end.
That's true.
You know, home inspection, PMI, high end doesn't get mortgage insurance. It's the low end that gets the mortgage insurance.
So, but you're offering, if you make a certain amount of money, you might do it not counted as a mortgage insurance. You might add it as an extra point to the interest.
Yeah, but
interest
when
rate
you say high end, I'm thinking $5 million
home.
Well,
no, I'm...
That's really
high end. That's beyond me. Yeah, no. My definition of high end is just.
I used to teach a class. Like there are classes you could take as first time home buyer. Really, it's. I would recommend you like working with somebody that a friend of a family friend or somebody has worked with, because I know you could get out there and just get, you know, pick a name out of the internet, but really this is what the difference is. You know,
well,
you get what you pay for.
We did the reverse. We went out looking for properties and found one we liked, and there was an agent attached to that, and then they represented us and they represented the seller. And I thought, gee, that's great. They'll just negotiate this whole thing out. And I didn't have anybody representing. I didn't go find somebody to represent me. I found a property. And I said, I want to buy it.
Usually it's better to have your own agent, Paul, because he or she is looking for your interests. Whereas technically, a listing agent is actually representing the sellers.
Yeah, right.
You know, now, I'm not saying that they're not giving you a good deal. But nevertheless, they have signed a contract with the seller to sell their home.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have your own agent, he or she is interested in serving your needs and getting the best price for you.
Well, I suspect most people don't have somebody referred to, and they just go out and start either looking around, or they just ads in the paper, and then that's how they pick up an agent, or they don't pick up an agent.
That's very true.
And I don't think they ever think about lenders other than their bank, because that's the only relationship I had. I wouldn't have known how to find Faye. I wouldn't have known how to find you.
Now I know.
Well,
listen to my podcast.
Yeah, well, there was no place to Google it or anything in those days. It's 20 years ago, so.
Very true. Or Zillow, or, you know, Yelp. Yeah. You know, you can search Yelp and find Faye or Zillow. Yeah.
We used to have this program called My Community Home Buyer Program, like back then. Like, this is back 20 years ago, where if you took a class as a consumer, We used to give you a loan with like 3% or 5% down back then.
It makes sense.
And it was actually a book talking about everything that we discuss in this book.
I think that should be.
It was a requirement for the consumer to take the class. I think it was 8-hour class.
8-hour class.
I think that's smart.
It went over everything. You know, how to save, when you start saving, what to look for in a home and an inspection, et cetera, et cetera. And I still think it's a very good.
They still have classes, but it's not 8 hours. It's all computer. Base, and I don't think you're going to get the same thing out of sitting up by a computer than actually
either.
Going into it.
Because you don't know what to ask, even. I wouldn't have known how to, like today you say you can go Google it, but that's only if you know it exists or what your options are. I didn't know. I got educated on the spot, the hard way, and now I know more having gone through it, but I've forgotten so much. It was 20 years ago. So I think this podcast is great. We should find real estate firms, banks, mortgage brokers who give this out to people. Give this out to people. Share this. Because I don't think most real estate agents really want to spend the time either, particularly first-time home buyers. It's like, come on, I got a million things to do, and you want me to go through all this stuff?
First-time home buyers actually are a little bit more work. That's why they don't want to spend that much
time. Yeah, they want to stay away from
it. Well, also,
Faye seems sympathetic to them, but most of them are like, get out of here.
Well, you know, you have to think of it. These are the people that are going to buy you $1 million a year, you know, 10 years from now.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You know, I think one of the reasons I do this job, and it's like, it's like seeing the smile, you know, making your dream come true.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't get that done with the $3 million.
But do we have those kind of, I'm sure there are examples of brokers and of real estate agents who have worked with the same client through multiple sales. But I think most of, if I went back to find the real estate person who sold me my first house or my second house, I'm sure they're doing something else by now. I don't know that they're even in business anymore.
Well,
I never have heard from them. I don't even remember their names. Yeah,
that's true.
That's true. I don't know. But I'm going to just, because we have only about
a couple of minutes left, yeah.
And I've got quite a few.
I'm sorry. I got off on my rant
here
about that.
I know. So, but I wanted to cover, you know, what is your mortgage loan approval? What is, you know, what is the process, how mm-hmm. you go about it? And we have very short time, so I'm going to have to summarized
okay,
everything.
Go.
Basically, there's four things you know, when we lend money, is the four C's for us, like the credit, the capacity, which is the income, the capital, which is your asset, and the collateral, which is the property.
The That's four C's.
The okay. four C's of lending. So
okay.
number one is your credit.
Mm-hmm.
Before you start, before you want to buy a property, my recommendation is probably 6 months in advance, get a copy of your credit report.
Mm-hmm.
Understand what's on there, if everything that's on there is correct. Because if you want to fix something, you don't want to fix it when you start the transaction.
No.
This is because there are a lot of people out there that try to help you clean your credit. And you know what my opinion is of all of
we've talked about that. You're not too big on that.
I'm not too big about that. I think everybody can manage their own credit report if they have the time. So it's number one thing you want to do if you are looking to purchase is get a copy of your credit report. You can get a copy of your credit report once a year for free from the agencies. There are mm-hmm. three sources of credit: TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian.
And they're not all exactly the same.
Exact. There may be stuff that's on the one and it's not on the other mm-hmm. one. But
like you talk about, department stores may only report to one credit agency instead of all three. Or
yeah,
something.
And maybe like say a collection account may mm-hmm. just, because a lot of collections just report to Experian. They don't report to the other agencies. Mm-hmm. So you need to get a copy of your credit report and look at it and be sure there's nothing on there that you need to fix.
Okay.
Or let's say, and I'll tell you, it's not just about fixing something that's bad. Let's say I'm on a credit card with my dad, mm-hmm. and there's the balance, but like I want to get my name off of it. Mm-hmm. I can do that 6 months in advance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not my obligation. My dad put me on that credit card 50 years ago.
Yeah, right.
You know, stuff like that. Or, you know, you may have like a loan you didn't know about, or stuff that, you know, especially
surprises.
Right.
So, or just open credits that are going to count against you. I've got a Target account that I signed up for as a promo. I've never used it, but it still shows I could
right.
charge up to $10,000 there.
Do not go closing your accounts, because very few time is it closing accounts actually helps you.
Okay. So I would have thought the opposite. I would have thought
that's why you were talking.
That's where
you were
going
that. Do not do anything. So it's best to get a copy of your credit report. It's best if you get it from a lender that you want to use later on. I tell my customers to call me like 6 months in advance so we could like have a chat. Usually I sit down, we talk about the credit report, get a copy of the credit mm-hmm. report, and also look at the bank statement. Now, have you already saved up money? Like, you have to have a budget.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way you're going to get from, you know, point A to point B without having a plan.
Yep.
And not having a budget is like,
if you don't know where you're going, any path will take you there.
And so, you know, and people are surprised. You know, I sit down with first-time home buyer many times, and the way I go about it, I ask them to bring me 2 to 3 months of their bank statement.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can tell, especially with the millennium, you can tell how they spend their money. You know, are they spending $30 to $40 a day on lunch?
And coffees,
Starbucks. Like,
right.
You know, $50 per day for Starbucks and lunch works out to about $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
And that could be your down payment. So you have to have a budget, and then you have to know exactly, you know, what kind of a down payment you need.
Mm-hmm.
Or the
opposite, I see that they build up a credit card and then they're just carrying $10,000, $20,000 in debt, not realizing how much that's costing them just to carry that debt.
To carry the debts, and also, like, once you have a budget, you have to know, my car lease has ended. Now I'm driving this car. Am I going to need one 3 years from now? I have to count for this. And you also, when you purchase a property, you have to count for the maintenance. There is no more landlord that's going to come and fix
That was my rude awakening. I didn't have a budget for maintenance of my house and repairs and things.
So I actually sit down with my first-time home buyer. If they have their budget together, I sit down and go over their budget with them, because people sometimes tend to not be realistic about their budget.
Okay, so that's two. We got the capital and we got the credit.
Okay.
What are the other two C's?
Now, the other stuff you want to keep in mind, you probably don't want to change your job in the midst of purchasing a property.
That doesn't look good.
Well, you got to tell the person why you're doing it. Is it going to be in the same line of business? Are you going, let's say, from, a salary to commission? Is your pay structure is going to change? So that's why you need to have a person even a year before you're going to purchase your property, because they have to be your person to go to answer your questions. Mm-hmm. Not just when you're purchasing the property, but previous and afterwards. I get my clients call me all the time. You know, I did a loan 2 years ago. They still get a tax bill. They don't know what it is. I usually, with the technology.
Is that the norm? Because I didn't know there was a fee out there. I didn't do. I was went through a bank. There was nobody to talk to earlier.
There are a lot of people like me out there that can.
Nobody like you out there, Faye. Everybody should
sure
be calling you.
Like,
unbelievable.
No. There's a lot of good people in our industry that are out there that can help you. And our job does not stop with your mortgage closing, and it shouldn't stop with your mortgage opening.
Yes.
I always think of my job more as being a consultant and somebody that you can always consult. And
I felt whoever brain. I don't even know who I got the loan through. I know we got it through a bank, so I couldn't tell you anybody attached to it. But I felt it was the opposite. It started when we opened it, applied for it, and it ended when we got it.
Well, I hope you don't feel like that the next time you go through this.
Right. Didn't know there was another way to do it. Okay, so we talked about capital, credit. We talked about...
collateral is the property. So I think the best way about finding your home is finding... Really, what you have to define where you want to buy the home,
and that's a topic into itself.
That's a topic sun into itself. So if you pick your area, because if I tell you this is a good deal today, you wouldn't know if it's a good deal if you had not been shopping and looking at the area.
Very true.
So you gotta these are very specific stuff that you have to do. It's not and I tell people this: you're not buying a pair of pants. You're buying, this is your biggest purchase of your life. And take your time, research it, have all your questions answered, and I hope the trip would be a great trip for you.
Well, I know you say take your time, but we're almost out of time, so give us the last C here.
Okay. Looks like that's it.
Well, we got one more C. She got one more C. Cash, credit, collateral.
We talked about the asset, which was the capital. We talked about the credit, and we talked collateral was the last thing.
And capacity. Oh, okay.
Capacity was your income. Yeah. Like, don't change your job.
Got
don't
it. Yeah.
Don't do anything. So consult with the person that's going to help you with the loan. If you are thinking of changing the structure of your pay or you're changing your job, it could be something good. You're going from job A to job B, and you're getting more money. Nothing wrong with that. Just consult with the person. And please do not open new credit cards. Do not go buy a new car.
Yeah.
Oh, you'll be surprised. You'll be surprised, Mom.
Really?
Yes.
Well, looks like that's it. Thank you for listening. Make sure you check our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat, all under OCHC Radio. If you have any comments or concerns, please email us at OCHCRadio@gmail.com. And if you enjoyed this broadcast, please spread the word and help us grow.
All right, stick around. Here's our tip of the week from Green Eileen.
Hey, everybody. Green Eileen with your green tip of the week. Spring has sprung in Southern California, and I know that because as I'm driving down the freeway, I can see the native species are in bloom and that there's fragrance in the air, and it just makes you feel like we have a fresh beginning here in Southern California. But not all of us have a green thumb. Some of us need to kind of induce the process. So we're going down to our local nursery and we're getting our drought-tolerant plants and our succulents. We plant them in the yard, and we put our drip irrigation to make sure that they get their water. But what about mulch? Mulch is a crucial part of the gardening process, especially here in Southern California, because it helps hold in the precious water that we're using to water these plants. If you don't have it, the soil gets really hot, it gets really crusty, and it really stresses that plant out. So get the mulch in order to hold in that moisture. But there's other reasons to use mulch. One is that it's usually made of a good, friendly material like bark, leaf clippings, or pine needles, or compost. Most likely it's going to be bark, because if you're like me, you're buying it at Home Depot. And also, it makes it so it's really difficult for weeds to grow. It's a natural weed abatement process to reduce the types of chemicals that you're using in the garden. But I guess the best reason to mulch is that it creates curb appeal for your property. I know when I pull up to a home that I'm showing on the weekend, and if it has nice flowers and fresh mulch, it just gives that sense of homeownership pride. So mulching in your garden when you plant your plants for spring is your Green Tip of the Week from Green Eileen.
Our program today is brought to you by Faye Hamadanchi, NMLS number 221329, mortgage loan originator from Sierra Pacific Mortgage, NMLS number 1788, and Hamid Hamadanchi, real estate broker, BRE license number 01052530. From Optimum Real Estate Services, BRE number 01928541. All the information contained in this program is for educational and informational purposes and does not constitute accounting, tax, legal, consulting, or other professional advice. Equal Housing Lender.